Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. In just a few minutes' time, I'm going to answer your tech questions. But before we do, John Fardy is here once again to preview this week's Screen Time. John, what's on the show this week?
Jess, we're doing one of our specials. Tend to do them on bank holidays and stuff like that. I don't know why. That's just the way it's been. We are looking, my esteemed panel, at the best movie twists of all time. And it's going to be great fun, as in the best plot twist of all time.
Give me an example.
Luke, I am your father. Things you didn't see coming. Things that really shocked an audience. I don't want to go into them all because, you know.
Can I tell you my one?
Yes, please do.
I don't know if this will be on your list now.
Let's see.
Have you seen Gone Baby Gone?
Yeah. Yeah.
The first time I saw that movie.
It's a good one, all right. Yeah.
It was just a... What?
Yeah.
Like, genuinely, if you'd asked me 100 different potential endings, I wouldn't have picked that one.
Some people found it a bit too unbelievable, but I think it's okay. I'm not sure if that one features in our list, but it is a good one. It absolutely is a good one. The point of a good plot twist, though, is it can't ruin the film. As in, it can't be to the point of, oh, come on. Mm. You know, the guy was dead all or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
I find that that's an issue that I have with books sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're reading a really good, kind of like holiday read, that's just chewing gum for the brain, but you're invested in it. And then there's only 60 pages left. And then they're like, and it turns out he was a dog the entire time. And it's almost just to wrap it up and get it done.
That is annoying.
It can be frustrating. So, okay, I'm intrigued.
All of that will be covered in this week's Screen Time.
Awesome stuff, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, before we get to John, one of my favourite things to do is stumble upon innovators who are using science and technology to develop new solutions and who think entirely different from how the majority of us do. One such person is Stephen O'Neill, who is a PhD student at the University of Cambridge within the Department of Chemistry, who's with me now. Stephen, you're very welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit about what you've been working on.
Yeah, so what we've been trying to do is make soft and stretchy batteries that can match the properties of human brains. And this will allow them to be implanted in the body and really minimize the chances of causing any damage. Because if we think about traditional electronics like our phones or laptops, they're very rigid. So when we try to implant them in the brain, it can cause terrible scarring and inflammation and can start killing neurons or brain cells.
For those who may instantly balk at that idea, can you just explain why we might ever want to put a battery into the brain?
Yes. Yeah, so kind of integrating electronics into the brain can give us a variety of potential applications. So one of the main things that people are working on now is to try and treat brain diseases like Parkinson's or epilepsy. And to do this, we can use something called deep brain stimulation, where we're trying to stimulate parts of the brain that aren't working so well because their neurons are less active. So we can use kind of artificial electrical currents to make these parts of the brain more active, which will help with the symptoms of several brain conditions like Parkinson's or epilepsy.
So this is a medical endeavor rather than just trying to create cyborgs and all the rest, which I'm sure will come at some point. But just tell me about the work that you and your team have done, because as you said, batteries, as we know them when it comes to electronics, they are like they're getting thinner and they're getting smaller, but they're still rigid and they can be a bit cumbersome. There's a whole host of other issues that go alongside this. So just tell me about the work that you've done and how you've gone about it.
Yeah, so your typical batteries use electrodes, which are pretty stiff and rigid. So with our brains are about 60% water, 60 to 70% water, and that's what makes them really squidgy and soft. So if we try and put these rigid batteries in, we get a lot of issues and the body kind of rejects these batteries. So what we tried to do is to match the brain by making something called hydrogels. And these are materials which are also about 60% water. And the other 40% is made up of polymers. So these are long chains of atoms. And these polymers, we've actually made it so they can conduct electricity. So these polymers are charged. And this is what lets them be made into a power source or a battery. And the 60% water is what allows it to be so soft and squidgy and stretchable, almost like the jelly that you'd eat.
Can you just explain that a little bit further? Because again, if we use the phone analogy, people have smartphones, the battery drains. will this charge itself, and will there be a lifespan as to how many charges it could do?
Yeah, so this will, sadly, it will not self-charge. So to charge this battery, we will actually need to use another battery that will then recharge the battery. So this is, yeah, this is something that definitely needs to be looked into for future work, is how many cycles it can go of discharging and recharging. And currently we can get about 0.1 volts, which is a lot less than your battery you can buy in the shop, for example. So this is also a key thing, is to try and increase this power and voltage of these batteries.
You mentioned the importance of the makeup of your battery, so the consistency of the jelly and the water and all the rest. Is this something that can be utilized on a long-term basis? And I fully acknowledge and own the fact that I'm not a scientific person, so this could be a stupid question, but I suppose once it's in, is it in? Or what way does that work? And how much, or how intrusive, I suppose, how intrusive would this be on both the body and the brain?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I guess these batteries will have to be implanted in the brain. And then to be able to recharge it, you'll have to use, you can either potentially wirelessly recharge it through wireless power transfer, or you'd have to use wires and recharge it in the brain. Ideally, once it's in, and you won't have to constantly kind of take it out and put it back in. But the ways to recharge it will definitely be a key milestone in applying these batteries in the brain.
The achievement of getting the consistency that you have is incredible. Can you just tell us a little bit about how long you've been working on this and the previous iterations of it, as well as like what you've learned and how you've learned from those different iterations along the way?
Yeah, so I've been working on this project for about 3 years now. And yeah, a big part of this was trying to make the materials soft and stretchy and be able to conduct electricity without them becoming very stiff and rigid, because we want to keep them soft so that they can be just like the brain. So that was kind of one of the main challenges. And then another challenge was just designing the power source. So the way the power source works is it's actually inspired by electric eels, whereby electric eels are able to create electricity because they have different compartments of salts in their cells. So they have some compartments with very high amounts of salts and some compartments with very low amounts of salts. And these salts can be just like sodium chloride, like your common table salt. And when we have a high amount of salt and a low amount of salt, the salts actually naturally start flowing from the high to the low in a process that's called diffusion. So if we put something in between these two high and low compartments of salts that will only let the positive salts through. So for example, in sodium chloride table salt, you have sodium, which is positive, and chloride is negative. Then we get this difference in charge where the sodium builds up on one side, so the positive part. And this positive buildup on one side is actually what causes this voltage or this energy. So trying to mimic electric eels and get this process to work was one of the main challenges in this work. And now it is working well. So that was a nice inspiration from electric eels, and we're getting a voltage across our battery.
That is an incredible achievement. So what's next then, you know, from an academic point of view, what's the next step to kind of kick this on and test it out further?
Yeah, the next step would really be to confirm that they are biocompatible. So at the moment, we know we've tested these materials with cells. We can grow brain cells on these materials, but we haven't actually put it inside an animal's brain yet. So the next step would be to put these power sources in animals' brains and monitor the animals and make sure that they're okay.
Well, look, it is fascinating research. And as you've outlined, it has the potential to transform the lives of people living with certain conditions. So we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully we'll check in with you as you reach the next milestone in your research.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, that was Stephen O'Neill, who is a PhD student at the University of Cambridge. I adore hearing the innovation and the research like that. It just makes my heart happy. But that is it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.